Now, our next speaker is one of our younger supporters. He is one of the bright young lights of this movement. And he is also someone who is not a stranger to oppression. This man is currently also under police investigation for the crime of sending a tweet. He is someone who's appeared on many shows, and he was someone that you never quite understand how people are going to deal with pressure. Now, pressure is a very interesting thing because it causes some people to completely crumble, but it also causes some people to come out of their shell and show what they're really made of. And this guy, under the harshest pressure, because they didn't just go and arrest him, they took his doors off the hinges. At what time was it? 10 o'clock in the morning. His doors flew off the hinges and he was dragged out for a tweet. But he hasn't crumbled. He hasn't shied away. He's got stronger and stronger, and he's here today as our youngest guest speaker. Please give a warm round of applause to Wesley Russell.
Thank you, Mark. That's very much appreciated. It's a very warm welcome. Thank you, everyone, for attending today. I'm very much looking forward to this. Mark yesterday was saying, so how long is your speech, Wesley? And I was like, well, I've read about 20% of it, and the rest of it, a wing. Because for the rest of it, I really don't need to think very hard for the words to come out when it comes to talking about a certain institution that's been around with us for 400 years. And I think you can guess what it might be. So I'll start with what I've written so far. So today I want to make an appeal to rid a very pernicious habit which Brits have indulged in for far too long. I want to illustrate how one particular political party, which should have been the force for order and virtue, ultimately did nothing to prevent the decline of Britain, facilitating the sorry state in which she finds herself today. Now, some people in politics see fit that the existence of the state is only to secure the rights of individuals, self-regulating individuals, and that's it. Some people see the state's purpose is to materially provide for an infantilized population. These are both decadent, modern inceptions of what the state is for. The state has always existed to provide order for society. In order to have a cohesive society, you must have people united by their shared history, ancestry, culture, language, appearance, and what is often overlooked, shared morality. We don't often talk about that enough. So when the state fails to regulate these aspects of society as to homogenize and harmonize, society is doomed to unravel and eventually fade away. Unfortunately for us, not only have our governments over the decades failed to upkeep and maintain our society, but we've had a deliberate, conscious scheme imposed upon us which seeks to destroy our shared history, culture, morality, as well as our physical existence of our people. Once upon a time, this particular party I'm going to be talking about today actually wanted to provide safety and continuity for its people whilst in power. To illustrate this point, I will provide you all with a concise history of crucial immigration and citizenship legislation. Now, believe it or not, it wasn't until 1906 that the first formal modern immigration controls, as we have come to understand them, came into force with the Aliens Act 1905. Due to the fact that migration to this green and pleasant land has never been particularly high, there was no need for such legislation. That's one of the benefits of being an island nation, I guess, isn't it? While there was an Aliens Act of 1793, the Act itself was only temporary and was introduced to deal with one particular issue, being the many French who wanted to enter Britain to evade the upheaval of the French Revolution. Now, this new law, the Aliens Act 1905, gave the Home Secretary responsibility for immigration and making it a police matter to arrest illegal immigrants and the courts to then sanction their deportation. Now, if I were to get you all to hazard a guess as to which political party introduced this new law, you'd guess correctly. It was the Conservative Party. Because, as I said before, once upon a time, this party seemed to want to provide order and security for its people. But I don't say people feel like that today, do they? This law was brought in to deny what was seen as undesirable immigrants from entry into the country, those being Eastern European Jews, as it happens. Some may say it's quite telling that the initial motivation for closed borders Britain was the objection of this particular ethnic group. This is something I'm sure the present-day Conservative Party is very much ashamed of. After all, this is the same party with Boris Johnson as its leader, a man who once said, "I feel Jewish when I feel the Jewish people are threatened or under attack. That's when it sort of comes out. When I suddenly get a whiff of anti-Semitism, it's then that you feel angry and protective." Well, Mr. Johnson, do you know what makes me feel angry and protective? Is when people in authority and leadership, such as yourself, grovel to the black diaspora and celebrate Britain's diversity, which, as we all know, means a celebration of the deracination of native Brits from their native islands. Once again, we find ourselves with Black History Month, a celebration which is forced upon us annually from the top down, designed to instill white guilt amongst our own, rewrite our history, as well as browbeat those who know the great secret that we are not all made equal. So in short, don't expect the Conservatives to be implementing sensible policies such as the 1905 Aliens Act anytime soon. The next restrictions were brought in a decade later under the Aliens Restriction Act, 1914, by the wartime coalition government. Its aim simply to target enemy aliens residing in Britain during the First World War. 5 years later, this act was updated, which continued these restrictions into peacetime. However, it barred aliens resident in Britain certain jobs, the civil service, for example, and made it illegal for aliens to promote industrial action. To us in this room, such a law would be seen as perfectly reasonable and common sense. Why should immigrants be allowed to enter our state institutions as well as demand how our economy and culture should be? They're not us, and therefore they have their own group interests. And unfortunately, in our culture today, such measures would be inconceivable as they would be relentlessly attacked for their illiberal, racist, discriminatory, and inequitable nature. Motivation and justification for the extension of these restrictions was to safeguard jobs for Indigenous white Brits. Again, this is when the government seemed to give a damn about the well-being of its people. Despite these two acts of legislation at the beginning of the 20th century, if you could prove you were born within the British Empire, you could claim full citizenship rights to Britain. Unsurprisingly, the anti-white Labour Party introduced the British Nationality Act of 1948 to cement the rights of those residing in the Commonwealth to work and settle in the UK. This was the same year that the Windrush conspiracy took place. The now famous ship was originally called the Monte Rosa, which was taken by the British government as a prize of war from Nazi Germany and renamed to Empire Windrush. It is a great irony, perhaps intentional, that this particular ship would go on to become the icon of mass multiracial immigration into Great Britain. The responsibility for interpreting existing law relating to citizenship lied with the Solicitor General, who was at the time Frank Solskice, who, I already know what some people are thinking. They're thinking, was he? And all I can say is, yes, he was. Frank Solskice just so happened to be the son of a Russian Jewish revolutionary exile. That's something that crops up in history time and time again, Jewish communists. I'm sure his ethnic origins have had no effect on the decisions he would have made during his time in his position, do you? Solskjaer would also later introduce Britain's first legislation containing provision providing prohibiting group libel, as well as drawing up legislation for the Race Relations Act 1965. Is Frank Solskjaer not a perfect case study into why you do not let non-natives obtain power within your institutions? Abusing our meritocratic, liberal, democratic system to drive our politics to our eventual ruin. It wasn't until the 1950s that the Conservative government started to consider the long-term ramifications of coloured immigration, with the next substantial piece of legislation to curtail immigration coming from the Commonwealth with the 1962 Commonwealth Immigrants Act, which finally ended automatic right of people of the Commonwealth to settle in the United Kingdom. Only those with work permits, which were typically only for high-skilled workers such as doctors, were permitted entry. You notice you always have to have a little caveat there, because we always have to maintain this idea that immigration is inevitable or natural or needed, which it isn't, okay? As I said earlier, we're an island nation. That's how we've always been. We've existed for hundreds of years without immigration, okay? You know, it doesn't even make sense. How can you have an economy unless, what, it's constantly expanding? It doesn't even make sense. Despite the Conservative Party being responsible for the two most important pieces of legislation to halt immigration into this country, I think it's safe to say in present year they've completely failed to stop at this point the outright invasion of our country. And that's where any kind of compliments or praise for the Conservative Party end in this speech. So there we are. They introduced those laws. They didn't exist. But did it make any difference in the end? No, it didn't. Since the 1960s, the 1960s being a year that many in Western societies think of a notable decade as really being the obvious decline of Western societies. Indeed, in the 1960s was when the Labour Party introduced divorce reform, the Abortion Act, as well as the Race Relations Act. These, of course, are extremely important pieces of legislation which have gone on to define our multicultural, multiracial societies ever since. Now, it's all well and good saying, oh, but those were introduced by the Labour Party, so we should be blaming those Marxist Labour Party socialists. If it wasn't for them getting in power, then we'd be fine. Well, they got in power, but that was only for one third of the time. Since the end of the First World War, the Conservatives have been in power two-thirds of the time. Two-thirds of the time. Not half, not less than half. The majority of the time. They could have repealed any of these or reformed them, you know, at any point, but they didn't. After the Divorce Reform Act 1969, divorce exploded. They tried to amend this. 4 years later, the Conservatives, they added a few more grounds that must be demonstrated before a divorce can be granted. But ultimately, it did little, if anything, to stop the explosion of divorce. And since then, they've done nothing at all to maintain the sanctity of marriage. And that's why marriage is literally seen as a piece of paper by most in society, unfortunately, now. And as I'm speaking, as of next year, they will have introduced yet another piece of legislation, the Divorce, Dissolution and Separation Act 2020, which, for all intents and purposes, has legislated no-fault divorce in Great Britain. So it's not just people's opinion that marriage is a piece of paper. It quite literally is. It literally means nothing. The whole point of marriage was to secure a man and a woman together in lifelong union to raise happy, healthy, moral children. And that is, you know, rapidly fading. And we have a Conservative Party, who introduced legislation like this. What's that about? So there we go. Now, that's the end of my scripted section. And I remember Mark said, how long's your speech? And it's like, well, I'm quite known for being able to go off the cuff for a long amount of time. I've been able to do 4-hour streams without a script. So there we go. Well, let's start with one of the most notable prime ministers of recent years, David Cameron. David Cameron. Boo. So what am I going to start with David Cameron? Well, in 2006, before he was even prime minister, he would quote said, vote for anyone but the BNP. Now, why would he say that? Because that's quite significant, don't you think? Of all the parties you could vote for, don't vote for the one that has your ethnic interests at heart. He would rather you vote for the Labour Party or the Lib Dems or any of those other parties, probably even the Communist Party. He'd probably prefer you vote the Communist Party, let's be honest, than vote for the BNP. Utterly disgraceless. So there we are. In 2011, he had what's known as his Munich speech. So I've got the transcript here, and I thought we'd explore a little bit because it's quite significant because he's remembered as being someone who said, multiculturalism has failed, a bit like Angela Merkel. They say, multiculturalism has failed. Yes, it has. So what are you going to do about it? They don't do anything about it. They just facilitate it, and it goes on and on and on. So what was his approach to try and manage the decline of Britain? He says, we need muscular liberalism. Now, liberalism means many things, of course. It's a collection of different political concepts, including free speech, capitalism, democracy, tolerance, all of these things. One of the most important things is the secularism and individualism aspect to what he's getting at. So his idea, for example, when it comes to Islamic communities in this country, is we need to secularize them. We need to liberalize them. So what? We just turn them into degenerate individuals, like unfortunately many white people come and just what live in a consumeristic, atomized society. Is that his vision for Britain? That's not the vision I have for Britain. So he says, these young Muslim men find it hard to identify with Britain because we have allowed the weakening of our collective identity. Yes, we have, Dave, because we've uprooted them from where they were and put them somewhere else. That's why we don't have a collective identity. Under the doctrine of state multiculturalism, we have encouraged different cultures to live separate lives, apart from each other, apart from the mainstream. Now, this is true, but of course, the immigration and race question has always been very difficult because if we're being honest, do we want the immigrants to assimilate? I believe most people don't. Most people don't, but they don't want ghettos either. The problem is that asking and demanding assimilation has only happened because people have accepted and internalized that immigration is inevitable, which it isn't and it shouldn't be. So, of course, if you have the prospect of always having new people coming in and you're constantly bombarded, you cannot have a homogenous society. You have to have this multiracial project imposed upon you. Then, of course, people are going to be like, right, okay, fine. Well, can they at least be like us somewhat, you know, speak our language, you know, kind of respect our institutions, our political parties. But really, that's not going to work in the long term. Because as we, as ethno-nationalists understand, it does come down to race, ethnicity, and nation. Many, for example, think of Black History Month. Why do we have to have Black History Month? It's because black people, for example, are not entwined with the history, by and large, of this country. And deep down, they know that. They know that. You can put as many black people retroactively in the history textbooks for children. But, you know, they're not fools. They're going to know. They're going to know. And that's why you can have all of these, you know, political campaigns. You can try and rewrite history, but people know deep down that we are the native inhabitants and that we have a right to this island. It's only white Europeans that think, oh, no, we can't have that. If you go to any other part of the world and say, do you think British people have a right to exist and be sovereign and supreme in their own lands? They'll say, absolutely, just like we are in our own. Cameron goes on to say, we failed to provide a vision for society that which they feel they want to belong. Well, yeah, I mean, it depends. They're more going to be more ethnocentric than us. Europeans obviously are a more individualistic people, which is one of our weaknesses. And that's why it's so important that we have so many of you like-minded people here today to fight on behalf of our collective family. We've even tolerated these segregated communities behaving in ways that completely run culture to our values. And what are our values, Dave? What are our values? Of course, it's our tradition of liberal values. So it's just a bit ironic, isn't it, that the same liberal values that brought these people over are also the same people that are going to, what, undo and unravel those liberal values? And that's where the muscular liberalism comes in. What we need to do is indoctrinate these people to become consumeristic, atomized, individual, secular people like us. That's how we'll get around it. Well, that sounds a bit authoritarian to me, not very liberal, Mr. David Cameron. So there's a bit of an oxymoron going on there, but that's because the idea that liberalism does indeed facilitate liberty is a hoax. It's not true. There is no such thing as absolute liberty. There never was. The failure, for instance, of some to confront the horrors of forced marriage, the practice where some young girls are bullied and sometimes taken abroad to marry someone when they don't want to, is a case in point. This hands-off tolerance has only served to reinforce the sense that not enough is shared. Well, which one is it? Again, here are the contradictions within liberal philosophy. Either you be tolerant and you allow them their liberty to practice what they believe, go about their business, freedom of religion, etc. Or you tell them, no, actually, you have to abandon those or weaken those, compromise those to what? Assimilate into this decadent, secular, meaningless, consumeristic society. This all leaves some young Muslims feeling rootless. No, Dave, what makes the Muslims feel rootless is because they have been uprooted out of their ancestral homelands where their religion was supreme. I think that's... I got one more thing to say about Mr. Cameron. I just went on a rant a minute ago about how the Conservatives have facilitated no-fault divorce. Remember the Same-Sex Couples Act 2013? Remember that? Remember how that was imposed upon our country when literally nobody was asking for it? The vast majority of the people at the time didn't want same-sex marriage. But of course, a Conservative Prime Minister introduced it. Again, further eroding the sanctity and the importance of heterosexual marriage, which is the bedrock of a civilization. That was a Conservative Prime Minister, and you still hear so many Tory politicians and activists saying how proud they are that they were the ones, they were the real egalitarians. It's the Labour Party or whoever, they're the real homophobes. Okay, we're going to outdo them. And this is what they always do. They always try and outdo the opposition. And I don't know why. But maybe it's because they don't actually care, because the Tory party has existed for centuries purely to exist the centre ground and just obtain power for as long as possible, as well as also being, you know, the party that just accepts big donor money. They don't have any values that they really stand for at their core. And whenever they do seem ideological and, you know, say, oh, no, we do have principles, we do have these, They just default to the classical liberal values, which is, it does not give you the moral authority to actually conserve the things that you love in society. Whether it be your religion, whether it be your ethnic group, whether it be all kinds of various traditions, you can't protect those because, people are free to undermine them. They're free to mock them. We need to secularize everything. That's just the way it's got to be. And if you are to, pass legislation to protect those things, that's authoritarian again. But then he's fine using authoritarianism to tell Muslims that they need to secularize and how they need to live their life. So there's just so many contradictions. And I think most people understand this, don't they? Let's talk about one of the most overt, treacherous prime ministers ever. I think you know who I'm going to talk about. The one that was supposed to take us out of the European Union, but, she was reluctant to. Ironically, the Conservative Party has a long legacy of treacherous prime ministers, but I think we'll just go with Theresa May as the most treacherous for today. She was Home Secretary for a while. Hostile environment policy. Do you remember that? Yeah, that worked. Yeah, she really went hard on that. This was, of course, kind of similar to what PA wants, and that is to create an environment where people want to go back home. You know, they understand, we don't belong here. This isn't our place. This isn't our ancestral homeland. We should go back. Her approach was, we'll make it so vile and horrible. But it didn't really happen because if you were to do that, you'd have to make society so unbearable for these people that, you know, they feel like they're being persecuted or genocided. But then that would kind of contradict with their liberal, tolerant, secular values, wouldn't it? So that was a failure, and it was always going to be. But also, do we really think Theresa May wanted to get immigration down? Clearly not, if she's signing up to things like the UN Global Compact for Migration. So again, it's just another example of it's all talk with these people. It's always talk. In 2017, I remember, she was at the Conservative Party conference and she gave this spiel about, we understand your concerns about if the pace of change is too rapid. It's just all talk. The immigration has been the highest ever, particularly under Boris Johnson, with the Conservatives. They've carried on Blair's legacy. Boris Johnson and Priti Patel have outdone them with last year's immigration rates, and illegal immigration is through the roof. I remember some nationalists said, the illegal immigration problem is just a bit of a distraction. Said, what matters is the legal migration, because obviously that's so incredibly high. That's what's driving us towards demographic minority fastest. But unfortunately, illegal immigration has actually become a very pressing issue because it's gotten so high now. The other week, it got as high as over 1,000 illegal immigrants in one day. We don't know who those people are. Okay, not that the Conservative Party really vets for quality anyway with legal migration. But these are illegal immigrants. These are going to be people who are going to be more proclive to commit horrendous crime, rape, theft, murder. And the Conservative Party are allowing them in en masse, as well as the legal migrants. And I tell you what, if that rate of illegal immigration keeps going up and up, it's gonna reach the point where it's the same as the legal migration. It's just getting absolutely crazy. Of course, Boris Johnson wants to give amnesty to loads of these people who we have no clue who they are. But bringing it back to Theresa May a second, we'll change the topic a bit from immigration, because I did want to also talk about morality a bit today as well. Under her tenure, the sex education was reformed in this country in 2017. So in March 2017, it was announced by the Department for Education that from September 2019, relationship education in primary schools and relationship and sex education in secondary schools will be made mandatory in England by the UK government. Again, Oh, is that your muscular liberalism? Do we need to use the force of the state to make people inclusive and tolerant and believe in the doctrine of equality? And that there is no supremacy of heterosexual marriage, for example, or heterosexual relationships? This new education policy was LGBTIQ inclusive, but there's so many more letters now, it's crazy. I was at work the other day. They put up a new poster for LGBT inclusion, and there's just so many more letters now. I'm not even joking. It's gone far beyond LGBT. It's kind of crazy. Ultimately, the new RSE strategy still allows parents to withdraw their children from sex education, but they'll have to seek their head teacher's permission, which can be denied. So that's not much liberty at all, is it? Due to this change in attitude to sex education, there are now sex education lessons in UK schools advising kids aged 6 about masturbation. Why on earth is this happening in primary schools? This is what's taking place in our country right now, under conservative rule. They've been in power for the past 11 years, people. When are people going to wake up? You know, we've not got the Labour Party in charge. It's the Conservative Party. At any point, they could legislate against this. They could go on a cultural crusade against any of this, but they don't. They don't do it with any of it. But it's okay, because, you know, MP David Davies' response was, these classes go way beyond the guidance of the government is producing and is effectively sexualizing very young children. Yes, it is, Mr. David Davies. What's your party going to do about it? They're going to do anything about it. So there we go. I'm going to finish off with Boris Johnson now. That should be a bit of fun. Still on the topic of LGBT, they're going to ban LGBT plus conversion therapy. Now, whether you believe that conversion therapy works or not is one thing, but the fact that they would go out of their way to ban such a thing is quite telling, don't you think? And I think another thing that I'm going to be very honest about with you guys today is we've allowed the left to tell us that homosexuality and transgenderism is innate and you're born with it. But frankly, being a young person growing up in this kind of society, I can tell you now, I'm very much suspect of that. It seemed quite a convincing argument that homosexuality, for example, was innate. Indeed, up until recently, it was believed it was about half environmental, half genetic. You know, perhaps you might have a disposition, but you otherwise wouldn't act on it if your environment, for example, you live in a socially moral traditional society that encourages the supremacy of heterosexual marriage and the sanctity and the importance of that, they'll live healthy, happy, moral lives. But we don't live in that kind of society. We live in a kind of society where we have to see the rainbow flag everywhere. I am so sick of that flag. And I'm also I'm disgusted. I'm disgusted that there's been a deliberate entwine the rainbow flag with the NHS. Have you noticed this? Yeah? You've noticed this? They deliberately tried to entwine sexual deviance with the healthcare system. I mean, but that's the kind of topsy-turvy world that we live in, is it not? A few more remarks. Diversity built Britain, is what we're told. This is what we're told in the year 2021. You see this? This is a 50p coin. Do you want to know what it says on it? It says, diversity built Britain. Well, apart from that being not true, I'm going to stress the point again. This coin was authorised by the Conservative government. Indeed, Boris Johnson has the most multi-ethnic cabinet there's ever been in this country. Again, this isn't the Labour Party. Do you remember a few decades ago when the Labour Party were making new ground with their all-women shortlist? Oh, we've got to get more women into Parliament. And again, the Conservative Party, like, ha, we're going to outdo you. We're going to have the most racially diverse cabinet. Ha, take that, lefties. So we've got Indian and Pakistani ethnic minorities in our cabinet, and this is how they repay us, by dogmatically reminding us a false history of these islands. That's disgusting, and I'm livid about it. Yeah. Yeah, they don't do that much of that, do they? They don't do much defending of anything. I'll finish off by saying they've done nothing to try and reverse rampant divorce. They've had no cultural pushback to the laissez-faire attitude towards abortion. Now, regardless of whether you think women should be entitled to abortion for the first few weeks, you know, the Conservatives have done nothing to stop the progression of seeing abortion as just casual contraception. When I was out the other month, I was with a friend, and the reminder went off on their phone. And so they pulled out their phone, and what the reminder said was, remember to take your baby-killing pill. This is the kind of attitude which has been allowed to facilitate and fester in our country. Now, of course, nothing much in terms of abortion law has changed. Not really. It's stayed about the same for the past few decades. But this is the kind of culture that they facilitated. Again, they're supposed to be conservatives. If the moral fabric of society is in jeopardy, it should be them who are trying to uphold and maintain it. But they don't. They don't care. The last thing I'll say, and this is to then get into my outro, the appeal that I started off by saying I wanted to make to the people listening today. I don't need to appeal to you guys in the audience, but for anybody who stumbles across this speech, I want to make an appeal to them. So it was in the news only 2 days ago that urging the change of gender is to be criminalized. Wow. That's remarkable, isn't it? That seems like the Conservatives actually wanting to use their power in office to try and maintain some kind of order and sanctity in society. Why do we want to allow vulnerable kids to be indoctrinated, to have gender-fluid identities and to, you know, engage in sexually deviant lifestyles just because they have militant ideological parents? That's not fair. Those children should be protected. So in this article, it said, adults who try to persuade children to change their gender will face criminal sanctions under government plans. From next spring, it will be illegal to convince someone to change their sexuality or gender identity with extra safeguards to protect adolescents. Government sources suggested that the organisations such as Mermaids, a charity that offers advice and counselling to children with gender dysphoria, could be outlawed. Trans rights groups said that the proposals risk having a chilling effect on free speech. Now, does anybody believe that this is actually going to happen? No. It's all, you know, it's nice to see something like this every once in a while, but is it actually going to get through the House of Commons, even though this is one of the most powerful Tory governments we've ever had? Because Boris Johnson managed to swindle the Red Wall voters that, you know, he was going to maintain a conservative society for them and be their guy. No, instead, he'd rather invite his wife to the conservative conference to host a special little event all about how she's an LGBT ally. So when you've got that in mind, do you really think they're going to implement any legislation like this? I don't think so. So to wrap up, the appeal I want to make to you today is we need to stop this really pernicious habit of saying, oh, the Labour Party, they're so, you know, anti-white. Oh, Tony Blair's legacy, you know, Tony Blair, we can never stress enough how much Tony Blair's legacy and how awful it is. You know, it's them, it's the left wing who are always setting the precedent of where, you know, how much more decadent society can go, which is not much further, I swear. I mean, if it gets any more decadent, I mean, blimey. I don't know how it's possible, but they'll find a way. They always do. But we need to stop blaming them because we know what they are. We know what they exist to do. They exist in society to corrupt and induce chaos. And who we should really point the finger at is the Conservatives. As I said earlier, they've been in power two-thirds of the time for the past century, okay? It's they who should have the blame, not the Labour Party, okay? Treat the Labour Party just like they're silly little children, okay? The Conservatives are supposed to be the adults in the room, and they have not taken responsibility. The Conservative Party need to be framed as the quintessential obstacle for ordinary people to live healthy, happy lives. We need to focus the blame solely on them, okay? Always be calling out their lies and inaction. Take their votes away, okay? I know it's hard. You'll never destroy the Conservative Party. It's existed for 400 years. But you can make the Labour Party irrelevant. You know, only the most sick and deranged people, honestly, left, like, are going to vote for them, you know, or the most, you know, prone to ideological indoctrination. Make it so that the Tory Party, in the minds of the public, are the ones on the left. Outflank them to the right. Don't try to, you know, be centred and moderate what you say and your ideas to try and appeal to the masses, okay? Be as hardline as you can, because we have strayed so far away, okay, from, you know, the kind of society that we want, okay? Straddling the middle ground is not going to cut it. Never praise them, always criticize them, keep them on their toes, okay? Do you know how whenever we have some kind of egalitarian cause, whether it's feminism or racism, we always hear this phrase, we've made so much progress, we've made so much progress, but there's so much more we can do, so much further to go. That's what we need to be like with the Conservative Party. Every time, if they ever concede and make a concession to us, for example, as Mark was saying earlier about how certain other groups adopt PA policy, should the Conservatives ever adopt more hardline stances that we would praise, don't praise them, say, do better. Can't you go further? Do more. Never let them off the hook. Keep them on their toes all the time, because that's where we've been going wrong. We live in a hostile country to its native inhabitants, both physically and spiritually. Anti-whiteism and degeneracy is rampant. We are not a healthy, happy, homogenous nation at ease with itself like we once were. It didn't used to be like this. It doesn't need to be like this anymore. No more excuses for those who facilitate our demise. Thank you.